Pantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Fade to Red by Linda Castillo. Narrated by Anne-Marie Lee. There is a reaper whose name is Death. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Prologue. Death terrified her. Somehow she'd always known hers would be violent, that it would come early in life, that it would be terrible and grueling, and in the end, she would beg for it. This was worse than terrible, worse than anything she'd ever imagined, even in her nightmares. Not even the lavender haze of the drug could dull the sharp bite of the knife. She felt every injury to her flesh with a thousand screaming nerve endings, every second that ticked by like a death knell. She struggled against her binds, twisting and straining until the wire scraped against the exposed ulna, causing agonizing pain in her wrists. But she knew it was useless. They had been as careful as she had been careless. Now she was going to pay the ultimate price. The realization sent a surge of hopelessness through her, followed by a sickening rise of panic that pooled inside her like vomit. This was it. The end. They were going to kill her, and there wasn't anything she could do to save herself. The reality that fate could be so merciless filled her with outrage. After everything she'd been through, everything she'd overcome, everything she had endured in a life that had been far from easy, the last thing she would ever see was this dank warehouse and her own blood under the bright glare of the lights. God damn them all! She didn't care. Hadn't cared for a long time. About life. About death. She just wanted it to be over. Quickly and without all the humiliations of dying. As far as she was concerned, she had died a long time ago. She drifted toward the darkness, reaching and straining for it with her mind, wishing desperately it would swallow her whole like a giant ravenous beast that would devour her so she would simply cease to exist. Another vivid flash of pain wrenched a scream from her, long and shrill and animalistic. She bit down on the gag and screamed a second time in outrage and fury, cursing them with every cell of her body. She rode the agony, felt it tear through her like a thousand tiny blades, wakening every nerve with a ferocity that left her breathless. She tried to deny the horror of what was happening. Tried to convince herself that the God she'd always known would never be so cruel. But the pain was hellish and relentless and a thousand times worse than death. She looked at her tormentor through the wet hair that hung in her face, and hatred welled inside her. The mask he wore should have terrified her, but it didn't. She understood all too well why he wore the mask, and she hated it. Hated him. Hated all of them. She tried to speak through the gag, but it was impossible. With her last dying breath, she wanted to tell him she had betrayed him, that she'd left something behind that would destroy him. She wanted him to know she'd won one last tiny battle, if only for a fleeting instant of satisfaction before he killed her. That was all she had left, but it wasn't enough to save her life. "I'll see you in hell," she thought, and a maniacal sound bubbled up from her throat. The eyes within the mask darted to hers. Within his gaze, she saw the light of his exhilaration, the depth of his cruelty. And in that moment, she accepted her death, accepted that it would happen here and now, and there wasn't a damn thing she could do about it. Except die. Oh, But she didn't know how. Didn't know how to take her last breath. Didn't know when to close her eyes. When to let her muscles go slack. She didn't know how to stop living. Dear God, she hadn't wanted to die alone. She thought of her sister. And grief stabbed through her with the same hot vengeance as the knife. Regret stung her heart. But she knew there would be no reckoning, no righting of wrongs, no last goodbyes. Don't cry for me, she thought. And when she closed her eyes, the world faded to red.
Chapter 1 Lindsay Metcalf woke to her own scream. It was a terrible sound in the stark silence of her apartment. She bolted upright, the sheets bunched in her fists, her heart beating out a maniacal rhythm. For several moments, she sat there listening to her labored breathing, trembling and disoriented, and more frightened than she'd been in a very long time. Slowly, the nightmare receded and she became aware of her surroundings. The dim light from the street lamp slanting in through her bedroom window, the sound of sleet hitting the glass, the tick of the wall clock from the living room, the hum of the ceiling fan above her bed. Shoving back the down comforter, she got up and padded into the bathroom. She ran the tap into a glass and drank it down without stopping. She rarely dreamed and never had nightmares, not even as a child. But for the fourth time in as many nights, the nightmare had wrenched her from her sleep. She'd wakened with a scream in her throat, her heart pounding and her body bathed in cold sweat. Afterward, all she could recall was a man in a mask and the utter certainty that something unspeakable was going to happen. Struggling to get out from under the dark press of the dream, she returned to the bedroom, yanked her robe from the foot of the bed, and jammed her arms into the sleeves. A look at the alarm clock told her it was nearly 3 a.m. Midnight in Seattle, she thought, and a now familiar shudder of worry went through her. She'd been trying to reach her younger sister for almost 2 days. For whatever reason, Tracy hadn't returned her calls, and Lindsay's initial irritation had grown into concern. Knowing sleep would not come again, she went into the kitchen, poured a glass of milk, and carried it to the living room. At the bar, she looked down at the answering machine and felt another low-grade flutter of anxiety. She knew listening to the message again would only feed her worry, but she needed to hear her sister's voice, even if that voice was shaking with fear. She punched the play button and listened.
Lindsay, it's Tracy. If you're there, pick up.
A snowy hiss when she paused.
Lindsay, please. I really screwed up this time. I think I'm in trouble. Call me, damn it.
A muttered curse, and then an abrupt click as the line disconnected. It was the dozenth time she'd listened to the message, and each time it brought goose flesh to her arms. Tracy rarely called. If not for Lindsay's determination to stay in contact with her, they would have fallen out of touch years ago. She wondered what had prompted Tracy to break protocol, what had her so spooked.
I think I'm in trouble.
In all the years Tracy had been in Seattle, even when she'd first run away at the age of 14, Lindsay had never heard her voice quiver like that. The only time she'd ever heard Tracy scared was when they'd been children. Back then, they'd both had very good reason to be frightened. Shoving thoughts of her childhood to the back of her mind, Lindsay snatched up the phone and dialed her sister's number. Four rings, and Tracy's answering machine picked up.
Hi, guys, it's Tracy. You know what to do if you want me to call you back.
Beep.
Tracy, it's Lindsay. If you're there, pick up the phone.
She paused, aware that her heart was beating too fast and that it was vastly important that she speak to her sister. "I'm at home, Tracy. Give me a call, okay, sweetie?" For a moment, she just stood there, holding the phone, trying hard to shake off the uneasiness that had settled over her. Tracy might only be 24 years old, 4 years younger than Lindsay, but she had good instincts and she'd always known how to take care of herself. She was probably going to get a good laugh out of this once she realized her overprotective older sister had been so worried. But deep inside, Lindsay knew good instincts were no guarantee against harm. In the early morning silence of her apartment, that knowledge made the hairs at the back of her neck stand on end. Separated by miles and years, Lindsay and her sister didn't talk as often as they once had, but Lindsay still felt close to Tracy. She sensed something was wrong. She felt it with the same intensity she had when they'd been kids and their stepfather had gone to Tracy's room instead of hers. They'd never discussed Jerry Thorpe or the havoc he'd wreaked on their lives, but it was a connection she and her sister shared. An undeniable link between two girls who'd grown up in nightmarish conditions. That connection may have frayed over the years, but it was still there. Tonight, Lindsay felt it as strongly as she ever had. Realizing there was nothing she could do, at least not until morning, she replaced the receiver. "Go back to bed," she muttered to herself. "Tracy's fine." But as she walked down the hall toward her bedroom, she couldn't quite make herself believe it. By noon the next day, Lindsay was pacing her apartment. She'd left two additional messages for her sister, but had yet to receive a call back. She told herself she was overreacting. After all, Tracy wasn't the most responsible young woman. This wasn't the first time she'd dropped out of sight for a couple of days. More than likely, she was out partying with her friends and hadn't bothered to check her answering machine. That would be so like live-for-the-moment Tracy. But no matter how hard she tried, Lindsay couldn't shake the worry churning inside her. At 1 o'clock, she called her best friend and business partner, Carissa Ross.
"Still no word from Tracy?"
Carissa asked. "I'm really beginning to get worried."
"It's still early in Seattle, Linz."
"It's been 3 days now, Carissa. She's not picking up her messages." Lindsay had met Carissa 4 years earlier while taking a class at Ohio State University. At the time, both women had been stuck in go-nowhere jobs and attending college part-time in the hope of landing better careers. Over coffee one evening, Lindsay had mentioned her dream of opening her own catering business. A degreed pastry chef, she had the food service expertise but lacked the business experience and capital. Carissa, on the other hand, was a certified public accountant and had been looking to start her own firm. While she had expertise and capital, she simply wasn't passionate about her chosen vocation. Lindsay's enthusiasm had made an impression on Carissa, and over the following weeks, the idea for Spice of Life Catering was born. They rented a postage stamp-sized space just off of High Street, not far from the university. After a rocky first year, Spice was in the black and earning a reputation both women were proud of. In the 3 years it had taken to transform the fledgling idea into a thriving business, their professional relationship had blossomed into a friendship that was more akin to sisterhood.
Maybe she's out with some hunky new boyfriend, Carissa offered. You know how Tracy is. Maybe they're holed up in some fancy hotel having mind-blowing sex. Maybe they're
okay, I get the picture, Lindsay cut in.
Like you have any idea what it's like to have mind-blowing sex.
The kind of sex I have is none of your business.
Carissa snickered. That's because you don't have sex, dearie. You give a whole new meaning to the word celibate.
We're not going to have one of those you need to get out more discussions, are we?
Come on, Linz. Your idea of a night on the town is Chinese takeout and a trip to Blockbuster.
So I like movies.
Carissa made a sound of exasperation. That's not the point. I'm talking about men. Trying to decide if she was amused or annoyed by her friend's good-intentioned meddling, Lindsay sighed.
Look, Carissa, I like men as much as the next girl.
You certainly had me fooled. Exactly when is the last time you had a date with one?
I'm not keeping track.
Let me refresh your memory, girlfriend. The last guy you went out with was that CPA I set you up with, and that was over a year ago.
Oh, him.
Remembering, Lindsay winced.
Mark Beck is hot, Linz. He's ambitious and attractive, and he spent $100 on some fancy dinner I couldn't pronounce, and then he expected me to have sex with him in the back seat of his Volvo.
The back seat? Really?
Carissa burst out laughing.
Did you?
No! Lindsay chuckled despite the fact that she didn't want to have this conversation.
I can't believe he did that.
The point is that I just don't need a man in my life in order to be happy.
A girl doesn't need chocolate to be happy either, but it sure makes her life a little sweeter.
I'll keep that in mind next time I'm having a craving.
Lindsay looked down at the answering machine and sobered.
We're getting off topic.
Sorry. Have you tried calling the restaurant where she works?
I tried earlier, but there was no one there yet.
What about her neighbors?
I don't know their names. Lindsay thought about it for a moment. I'm going to call the police.
A pause ensued, then Carissa's voice softened. Hey, are you okay?
For the first time, Lindsay realized just how concerned she had become. There was something in her voice, Carissa. I listened to her message a dozen times, and I swear she sounded scared.
Is there anything I can do?
Thanks, but no. After promising to keep her posted, Lindsay disconnected, then looked up the number for Club Tribeca, the upscale restaurant where Tracy worked as a waitress. She dialed, and a shrill female voice answered on the first ring with a rapid-fire utterance of, "Club Tribeca!
I'm trying to reach Tracy Metcalf.
She's not here right now. Can I take a message?
This is her sister."
She could hear the blare of rock and roll in the background, the din of voices, the clatter of dishes.
"It's important that I speak to her. Do you know when she'll be in?"
"Hold on while I check the schedule."
A click sounded as she was put on hold.
"Sure,"
Lindsay muttered as 2,000 miles of fiber optic cable hissed in her ear. In the back of her mind, she imagined Tracy jumping down her throat for calling her place of work and checking up on her. If Lindsay had learned anything about her younger sister in the last few years, it was that Tracy didn't like people digging into her personal business. A moment later, the shrill voice came back on the line.
"She's supposed to work tomorrow evening."
"Did she work yesterday?"
"Let's see. Looks like she was supposed to, but didn't show."
A beat of silence.
"Oh, yeah, now I remember. Jamie filled in for her."
The words "didn't show" echoed hollowly in Lindsay's ears.
"Wait a minute. Tracy didn't show up for work yesterday? Are you sure about that?"
"That's what it says right here. Someone scratched her off the schedule and penciled in Jamie's name."
"Do you know why she didn't come in?"
"I don't know, lady. Stuff like that happens, you know. Things come up. The rest of us just figured she had something going on and covered for her. No big deal."
But Lindsay was beginning to think it was a big deal and asked to speak with the manager.
A few minutes later, an authoritative male voice with a hint of an accent came on the line.
"This is Mason Fries. May I help you?"
"This is Lindsay Metcalf, Tracy's sister. I haven't been able to reach her and was told she didn't show up for work yesterday." An instant of silence.
"I'd be happy to take a message and have her call you."
"I've already left messages. She hasn't returned my calls."
"You've tried her at home?"
Of course I have. Lindsay struggled for patience that was beginning to wear thin. Isn't it unusual for her not to show up for work? I mean, did anyone check on her to make sure she's all right?
We assumed something came up. One of the other girls filled in. It wasn't a problem.
Mr. Treese, I've been trying to reach her for 3 days, and she hasn't returned my calls. Frankly, I'm beginning to think there is a problem.
I'm not sure how I can help, Ms. Metcalf.
Do you know if any of your employees have spoken to her, or maybe called her to see if she's okay?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I'm more than happy to check. Honestly, I don't believe her missing a day of work is cause for alarm.
Normally, I would agree. But she left a strange voice message a couple of days ago. She sounded upset.
All right, I'll check with my other employees to see if anyone has heard from her. How about if I call you back at the end of the shift?
That would be great. Lindsay rattled off her home and cell phone numbers, then disconnected. Without putting down the phone, she dialed Seattle information and asked for the non-emergency number for the police department. She punched in the numbers, and a male voice answered with a curt,
"Seattle PD."
Quickly, she explained the situation and asked him if there was any way the police could help.
"We can do a routine welfare concern check, ma'am, if you'll give me the phone number, address, description of the homeowner, and her vehicle description. We can send an officer by her residence to make sure she hasn't had an accident or met with foul play."
Relieved, Lindsay gave him the information.
"I can run the name through the computer while I have you on the phone," he said. "See if we come up with anything."
She heard computer keys clicking, then a decidedly unhappy, "What is it?" she asked.
"Looks like Ms. Metcalf has a warrant."
A warrant? It took a moment for the word to register. You mean for her arrest? What on earth for?
Can't tell from this computer system, but it's an active warrant.
Lindsay was speechless. Could it be for a hot check or something? Maybe she didn't pay a traffic ticket?
Maybe. Can't tell from here.
You'll still do the welfare concern check, though, won't you?
Sure. I'll send an officer out there right away, he said.
But from the change in his tone, Lindsay got the distinct impression that perhaps he thought Tracy might have skipped town to avoid the aforementioned warrant. You'll let me know what you find?
Yes, ma'am.
Thanks, she muttered, and dropped the phone into its cradle. A warrant. Wonderful. Leaning back into the sofa cushions, she closed her eyes and tried to make sense of the warrant. As far as she knew, Tracy had never been in serious trouble before. Sure, she'd shoplifted a couple of times as a teenager. She'd experimented with alcohol, maybe even marijuana. But she'd never been in trouble as an adult. She tried to convince herself she was overreacting. Tracy was a grown woman. Maybe she'd decided to take a trip. Maybe it was like Carissa had suggested, and she found someone she cared for and was in some fancy hotel making mad, passionate love, and Lindsay was a complete idiot for letting her imagination get the best of her. Or maybe the nightmares were a premonition, and something unspeakable had happened. It was nearly 5 p.m. when the police called back.
"This is Officer Bunger from the Seattle PD. I wanted to let you know an officer drove by the residence, ma'am. There's no vehicle in the garage or driveway. The house is secure. Front porch light is on. There was no sign of any problems. We did a walk around the perimeter and left."
Lindsay tried hard to be relieved by the news, but it did little to remove the stone of worry that had dropped into her gut. "Thank you. I appreciate the phone call."
"Sure thing."
She hung up and sagged against the back of the sofa, the officer's words replaying in her head.
"The house is secure. There was no sign of any problems."
"Except my sister is missing," she thought.
Lindsay knew it was crazy, but she wasn't going to be able to let this go. She'd never be able to live with herself if Tracy was in some kind of trouble and she did nothing to help. It had been almost 3 years since she'd been to Seattle to see her. A long time, considering Tracy was the only family she had left. What would it hurt to take a few days off and fly out for a visit? Mentally, she tallied everything she had planned for the coming week and realized Carissa could handle most of it. The rest could be canceled. Chances were, Tracy was fine and they were going to spend the next few days getting caught up on things, watching sappy movies, shopping at the Pike Street Market, and arguing over whether to have healthy food or junk food for dinner, the way they had the last time Lindsay had flown out to see her. If Tracy wasn't all right, Lindsay banked the thought before it could materialize. She wasn't going to go down that road. Not yet. Everything was going to be fine, she assured herself. Just fine. Chapter 2. Rain fell in sheets from a turbulent sky. Thunderheads hulked like brooding ghosts, obscuring the tops of buildings and slithering low to wrap the city in a cold and murky embrace. Lindsay turned the windshield wipers of her rented Taurus on high and wondered if the natives ever grew tired of the incessant storms. Tuning the radio to a local rock station, she left Seattle-Tacoma International Airport and took the 405 loop north toward Bellevue, where Tracy rented a bungalow. She'd tried to reach her sister several times throughout the day, once in the pre-dawn hours before she'd left Columbus, again during her layover at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport, and a third time once she'd arrived at SeaTac and was waiting for her suitcase to make it to the baggage claim. Her messages had gone unanswered. At just before 7 that morning, Lindsay had called Carissa and told her she was heading to the airport and would be spending the next few days in Seattle. Considering Carissa was not a morning person, she'd been a good sport about being roused from sleep and asked to take care of the week's engagements. She'd even agreed to water Lindsay's plants if she wasn't home by the weekend. Lindsay assured her she'd be back by then. The wipers waged a losing war against the driving rain as she left the freeway and entered Bellevue. The neighborhood was upscale and composed of older, well-kept homes with lush landscaping and towering trees. To her left, she could see the gray-blue water of Lake Washington reflecting an angry sky. 5 minutes later, she turned left onto Calamesa and parked curbside. Tracy's bungalow was an older home with a composite roof, small front porch, and mullioned windows. The brick had been painted an attractive dove gray, the shutters a glossy black that contrasted nicely. Dark green ivy shrouded the front of the house, giving it a rich European look. It was a classy place for a waitress. Tracy had always explained the disparity between her profession and the high-rent neighborhood by telling Lindsay Club Tribeca catered to an upwardly mobile crowd and that a good waitress could make as much in tips as their salaried executive clientele down in the financial district. Lindsay hadn't questioned that. Now, as she sat in her rented car and studied the house through the rain-streaked windshield, she wondered if maybe she should have. Since her umbrella was in her suitcase, Lindsay decided to brave the rain. Swinging open the car door, she grabbed her purse and hightailed it up the paved stone walkway toward the front door. Once on the porch, she used the brass knocker and waited. "Please be home," she grumbled. When no one answered, she cupped her hands and peered through the beveled sidelight. The foyer stood in shadows. She saw a console table with a Tiffany lamp, a mirror framed in intricate gold leaf, an imposing grandfather clock. Beyond, she could see the leather sofa and a large screen TV in the living room. She used the knocker again, then tried her knuckles on the side-light glass. When neither roused her sister, She turned up the collar of her leather jacket and proceeded to the rear of the house. At the side yard, she found the
sample complete. Ready to continue?